The promotion party has finished. Just. Football almost came home. There's a summer's worth of ins and outs to discuss. And did we mention that we're League One? Welcome to the first UTAS of the 21-22 season. Hello everyone, and a warm welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. In case you've forgotten who I am, because we haven't done a pod for a couple of months, my name is Jordan Warland. I want to start by emphasising that this pod is not a season preview. We'll be back real soon to do one of those, in which we'll provide some very bold predictions along the lines of not being promoted with Greg Taylor. But for now, the next hour or so is just a catch-up of all the summer activity. Some good, some bad, and some fashion disasters. Two lads have actually failed to report back for pre-season training. Jack Swindlehurst is understood to be up north, failing a medical with the Grimsby pod. And Julian Roberts is still out celebrating Italy's Euro 2020 win. I do have Tom and Owen with me. Tom, a warm welcome, mate.
Good to be back. First one of the year. Probably not stuck to my pre-season training regime as I should have done, but we go again.
It's all right, mate. You're not as bad as Lee McEvely. Just slightly on the way.
The most backhanded compliment.
It's going to be a long season, mate. In the last pod we did, Tom, you said your moment of the season was Liam O'Neill's goal at Port Vale. For those that don't know, you did go to a couple of the Euro games this summer. How does Liam O'Neill's goal compare to Harry Kane's second goal versus Germany?
That's a horrible question. That's really put me on the spot. I was fortunate enough to get to most of the England games. I think I missed the Scotland game for, you know, obviously not being able to quite get a ticket, but and obviously missed the game in Rome for obvious reasons. We managed to get to all the others.
Nothing against Scotland, by the way, mate. Absolutely nothing.
So I played it quite well. I'd have liked to have maybe missed the last part of the Italy game, but it is what it is. It's hard to describe because I think O'Neill's goal was the one that set us on our way, whereas the Kane goal was really the one that clinched it. So they're obviously slightly different, moments in games, slightly different scenarios. But the Kane goal was probably... I maybe shouldn't say on obviously the club pod back on club duty, but the Kane goal is probably the best moment I've ever had inside a football ground, just for the pure bedlam that followed that going in. The O'Neill goal feels a long, long time ago now, and yeah, it was only 3 months ago. That was pretty special. Well, hopefully more of them to come across the season.
And all the tension and the pressure that was there for the Italy game, would you have backed Big Joe to score penalty number 5 against that monster in goal for Italy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was
100%. Not even a question, that.
I mean, people were questioning Southgate's choice of penalty takers. I was questioning his squad selection. Seeing Big Joe Ironside left out of the squad. He's going for a knighthood. Is he having a laugh?
Brilliant. We're also joined by Owen. Good evening, Owen.
Hello, mate. You all right?
Yeah, good. Thank you. In the last couple of days, Owen, you've actually seen United in the flesh. You've been inside a stadium. You saw the players play. You were surrounded by other Cambridge United fans.
Yeah.
How was it? How was that experience?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic to be back. Whether it was quite the same atmosphere that Tom described at Wembley, I don't know, being surrounded by 700 other people at St. Neot's Stadium. But... It was nice. It was nice to be, to be back in a football ground and back seeing live football again. You know, it's been a long time since any of us have really, really seen that, especially at club level. So, let's just hope that, you know, it continues throughout the season now.
And was it good to see other United fans?
Some of them, yeah.
Some of them. I was going to ask if there was any kind of annoyance, because there's a part of me that's like, I can't wait to be back day one, a hot Saturday afternoon against Oxford, hopefully a big crowd, home fans, away fans. But then like 20 minutes in, someone drops their guts in the Habin And it just reminds me of you know, the bits that I don't like about being surrounded by other fans. So I'm a little bit torn about the whole scenario. But, you know, I'll have my mask there, so that hopefully that will help. Was Friday night, you know, was it worth the entrance fee alone, Owen, to see Wes in the flesh again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question. He's just magic, isn't he? Like, I don't know if anyone's seen the kind of gif of him against Cardiff, just sending that guy completely the wrong way. He did something a little bit similar against Brentford as well. Just, you know, his touch is just amazing, isn't it? It's just incredible. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to being able to see him actually in the flesh a lot more for United next season, because you know, he's getting on a bit, isn't he? You know, I don't know. You know, we're not going to get like 2 or 3 more years out of him. So let's enjoy him. Let's enjoy him while we've got him.
I saw the highlights. I saw the Nibs goal. And essentially, do you call it a Nibs goal or do you call it a Wes assist? Because it was such a ball in. It was terrific.
I don't think Nibs knew too much about it, did he? Like, you know, when he kind of like looked up, he had to look around to see if a ball was in the back of the net. But yeah, they all count.
I'm going to push you, Owen, to see if you can say anything bold this episode. And I'm going to start with a question. Do you think this is going to be Nibs' season?
I don't know. I can't be bold on that. It's, you know, we've brought in Sam Smith, haven't we? I think if, you know, if he sticks with two up front, and whether he will or not is, you know, is a big question, something we'll probably get onto. Because we haven't seen that really in the pre-season so far. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say it's make or break for Nibs, because he's still young. He's still got another year or so on his contract. But, you know, I'd definitely like to see more of him. He's got something about him. You know, I think he was a little bit unfortunate last season, but Mullin and Ironside just clicked so well together. But, you know, the season before, when he partnered Smith, he seemed pretty good. They had fairly decent understanding, and you know, they had Jack Rolls there kind of providing the assists for them. So, you know, let's see what they can do with Wes behind them.
Yeah. So on the subject of Nibs and Smith, we might as well start the pod by discussing strikers. The big postseason story for United centered around one striker. Will he stay? Will he go? If he goes, where will he go? How high and for how much money? I am, of course, talking about Andy Dallas. Tom, were you surprised to see him sign for United?
Sort of. I was surprised to see him sign 1 year. That was my initial reaction. I thought that we would either let him go or we would give him a slightly longer term deal. It seems like we're, you know, investing in the future for Andy Dallas. A little bit, but it was more the fact that we gave him 1 year, which seemed a bit odd. I mean, it suggests he's going to be part of the squad perhaps this season from the beginning for us. Probably not, you know, first choice, but certainly sort of in you know, in and amongst the squad. So, you know, I've kind of, you know, said my bit on Andy Dallas over the last few years. He seems like a hardworking guy. Obviously had a good loan spell away at Weymouth at the end of last season, which was, you know, I think scored like 1 in 2 for them, maybe even a bit more. So hopefully he'll return with a bit of confidence. When he's called upon, he might be able to show a bit of what he's about, because I'm sure he'll be really disappointed with how it's gone so far. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll talk the squad in detail at some point, whether it's today or during a season preview. He wouldn't necessarily be someone that I'd be calling on for League One, but you know, players get better as they get older, especially strikers. So hopefully with a bit of confidence, a few minutes under the belt, a good pre-season, he might be able to contribute. But I'm still firmly on the fence on that one.
Owen, you looked a little bit surprised when I said that bit earlier. It's as if you were expecting me to say another striker's name, as if someone had moved to Wales or something. We will get on to those that have left the club in part two of today's pod. But if I was to say to you, Owen, we've signed a guy from non-league who scored, what, 10, 12 goals in the last half of the season alone, you'd say statistically that sounds like a good signing, right?
He's definitely someone, like, you know, you look at those goals he scored, and he's, you know, he's someone you think, yeah, we'd take a punt on him. I mean, we've had this before. We've had players, you know, we've signed. I think Danny Carr was reasonably prolific in non-league, couldn't really make the step up to
blast from the past there, Danny Carr.
Yeah. Yeah, but couldn't really make the step up to League Two. So, you know, I'm surprised that a League Two club hasn't come in for him. I mean, I know he was, I think we had an extension on him, didn't we? So I can see why we extended that, so we can try and get some money for him. I mean, I do wonder if his kind of little prolific spell down at Weymouth there kind of made United think, actually, you know what, he's got a bit of value to us, if not a starting 11 player. Maybe someone was going to, you know, we're still going to be playing in the Papa John's Trophy, aren't we, this year? You know, we've still got that to do. We're still going to have FA Cup games and things like that. So, you know, yeah, maybe it is a case of giving him the odd minute here and there in the early rounds of that competition. Then, you know, then again, loaning him out with a view to maybe getting someone somewhere to pay for him in January. I don't know.
You mentioned the Pizza Trophy there. It's weird, isn't it? We're going to be a scalp in that now as a League One club. I can't wait. I was really surprised that he signed on. I wasn't surprised we offered him a contract, but I thought we were just playing the game, like offer him something so it would go to a tribunal and we'd get a small fee for him for moving on somewhere else. But surprised that he stayed. Obviously, Dallas wasn't the main striker transfer news that's happened so far this window. That belongs to Sam Smith, already mentioned on the pod, but let's talk about him in more detail. This was a signing that I didn't see coming. However, it makes total sense to me. I think he's a good fit for us, the sort of style of football that we play. And also, I rate him based on his work ethic and his work rate. So I'm really sort of happy with that transfer, and I hope it works out for him. But Tom, do you have any concerns about how prolific he's been in his career so far?
No, not really, to be honest. We were having pretty much the same conversation about Mullin, I think, this time last year. So I don't think it's necessarily anything to be too worried about. I think what we saw when he was here previously was that he can be an excellent player and certainly a good finisher as well. It's always interesting to see how people can step up. I think he's probably got a bit more natural quality, should we say, than Mullin, perhaps. I don't know if that's harsh. I think he's got a very good first touch. He seems to know how to get into the right areas, which is important for strikers, of course. I was really happy to see him come back. I think it's exactly the sort of sign that we should be making. He's still young, you know, still got time on his side. He's still going to be developing. He's got a decent level of experience already. And I think what we've seen of him shows that he can score goals. You know, I think he scored 7 when he was here previously. You know, obviously part of that season was curtailed. A big part of it, you know, he didn't even have the opportunity to play. And another part of it, he was actually ruled out with, I think, quite a nasty illness for quite a while as well. So the parts he actually played in that season, he was actually reasonably prolific. Now, it's obviously a completely different team and it's different management that he's coming into. But I would suggest that he's at least good enough to cause some teams problems in League One. And, you know, we've got to understand that we're going into a completely different challenge this year. We don't necessarily need somebody to score 30 or 35 goals like Mullin did for us to achieve what we want to, which is ultimately survival. We need someone who can chip in here and there, who can work hard for the team, who can help contribute to creating chances as well as taking them. And I think that's exactly what he can do. And if the worst should happen and we should fall a little bit short of what we want to achieve, then we know that he's very much capable in League Two. So I think it's a good sign. I think it's a really sensible sign. It's good business by the football club. And hopefully he can sort of pick up where he left off and, kind of continue from there.
I think your last point there about sort of the aims and the achievements that we want this season is really, really valid, because statistically, he joins us in a very similar, almost mirrors kind of Mullin's stats. And I'm just worried that if he doesn't score 20 by Christmas and doesn't get 30 for the season, he might not get the recognition that he perhaps deserves. But I think he is joining the team to play a different role to Mullin. One of the things that I was really impressed with when he was here before was his running of the lines, his running of the channels and getting in behind others. And I think with some of the attacking players that we've got, you know, Houlihan and Brophy and so forth, I think he could be quite fruitful for us. Owen, were you happy to see Smith rejoin?
Yeah, I am. It's he's obviously got big boots to fill because people are going to see him as the Mullin replacement. But, you know, I think I don't think our fans are kind of daft enough to expect him to get 34 goals next season or 36 goals next season. You know, I think, you know, of the two players, Mullin or Smith, you know, the pressure's all on Paul Mullin, really, to go to, I know we'll speak about him in a bit, but to go down to Wrexham and kind of perform again at the level he has, where, you know, Smith's going to come in. Last season, like you said, Tommy, he was out was it like meningitis or glandular fever or something for a while, wasn't it?
Fever, I think.
Yeah, and then the season was obviously curtailed, but, you know, I wouldn't have kind of bet against him getting up to like 12 to 15 goals next season. Ironside, if he weighs in with a similar amount, you know, I think part of our problem, not our problem last season, but we didn't have a huge amount of goal scorers, did we? You know, take away the front two, I think our next highest goal scorer was like Wurz and Hannon on maybe like five or six each, something like that. And all got a couple, and, you know, and it was just the odd ones here and there. So, you know, I think Bonner has said in some of his kind of pre-season interviews, he wants goals spread out a bit more around the team. So, you know, if Wes can kind of carry on with, you know, if he can get another five or six, Brophy looks decent. You know, I think he might be able to score a few as well. You know, we've got Nibs, we've got, you know, we've got Charlotte Tracy to come in as well. You know, so hopefully, yeah, we can get, you know, we can get some more goals around the team to replace kind of over reliance on just one main striker.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you sort of estimated 12 to 15 goals. I personally was thinking a similar sort of figure, like sort of 10 to 12 would be a good return, not because of a reflection of Smith and his quality, but more a reflection of what we're seeing so far in pre-season, and what it looks like is Bonner is perhaps not going to play two up top this season. It looks more like it might be 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3. And looking at the signings that he's brought in, well, if he does go with that route, I think Ironside will probably get the nod as the solo striker, although Smith does have a bit of height about him and he could maybe operate as a target man, even though it's not his, you know, his preferred kind of position. But sticking with those kind of formations, you look at the players that he's brought in going forward, I guess the two marquee signings, as you were, James Brophy and Jack Lancaster, they both seem quite sort of forward attacking players. Of the two of those, Tom, do either of them stand out as being the ones that you're more excited about?
I'm inclined to say Lancaster because I've not obviously seen much of him, and signing someone who's played for Ipswich in the Championship, someone we managed to actually buy off them as well, not just sort of pick up on a free, that seems like a reasonably decent sort of coup for us. You know, I'm happy we've got Tracy back as well, because again, you know, a bit like Smith, it represents pretty, I think it's simple business. I think it's good business that we've not necessarily done sort of certainly previous to last season. So I'm happy to see both of them come in, and they're, you know, we talked a lot last year in sort of previews about a sort of profile of player that we were going for. And it seems like we're doing exactly the same thing this year. So I'm overall pretty happy. And I think both of those two are the, if we're talking about spreading goals around the team, you'd be looking at those guys as being perhaps the ones who can chip in with maybe five or six each as well. Especially given that, you know, if we are going to play in a slightly different way, maybe there's going to be, you know, more chance for the wingers to get involved. So I'm happy to see both of them back. I think they're probably going to be quite different options as well. Obviously, Tracy, we know a bit about. You wouldn't necessarily rely on him to be consistent every week and be able to deliver top quality end product all the time, but he's certainly going to cause teams problems with his pace and with his sort of trickery. And, you know, he's certainly one that's going to keep developing with us. And again, you know, getting him on a deal that goes past the end of this season could be really good business as well. Lancaster, obviously he's got a bit of a knock at the moment. I don't think he's trained yet even. So he'll probably be one that we'll be seeing maybe in later weeks, probably towards September time, I guess. But yeah, certainly one that I'm really interested to see how he gets on, because Ipswich fans seem to quite, you know, rate him reasonably highly. They weren't devastated to see him go, but I think if you offered him the option of keeping him or letting him go, They probably would have liked to have kept him. And we know from the experiences we've had with like Idris El Mazzouni, for example, in the past, that they do produce some decent players. So if he can, you know, have a similar level of quality at League One level that El Mazzouni had at the division below, then we could be in for a good ride. So I'm happy that we got both of them in. They both look like decent signings, and hopefully they can chip in with a few goals as well.
When he first broke through for Ipswich, that sort of first season, apparently there was Premiership clubs sniffing around or sort of tracking him. And then I guess his progression has kind of got knocked a bit because he missed, I think, a whole season with a back injury. And then last year he was back. So, yeah, he's out injured now. Hopefully that's not a sign of things to come. Looks like he can play wide right. Looks like he could maybe play number 10. I guess, Owen, if you're playing in that kind of sort of area of the pitch, you're going to be quite lucky to be on the training pitch with Wes Houlihan to sort of learn from them, right?
I mean, if you want to learn from a player in that position, there's no one better, is there? Without wanting to wax lyrical about Wes or podcast again, because we've done plenty of that. But, I think Lancaster's still quite young, isn't he? Smith and Tracy are both young guys, you know, compared to Mullen anyway, who was kind of, 26, 27. To come in to play with someone like that, to learn from someone like that and, you know, just be around him, you know, we know Wes is a model professional. He always has been everywhere he goes. Little bit concerned about the fact that Lancaster's injured. Every Ipswich fan I've spoke to, I've got a couple of mates that support Ipswich, have said the guy is really good. We're a little bit disappointed to see him go. He said we've got a hell of a player if we can keep him fit. And yeah, for him to not have played a part in pre-season yet is a little bit concerning. I know there's still a little way to go, but yeah, you know, we don't want another we don't want, you know, one of those players. I can't remember the name of the guy a few years ago that we had that was, you know, really good. Was it Adam Phillips, something like that? Came with like quite decent pedigree and just spent the whole time injured. So
yeah, but then had like an amazing first half of last season and got Morecambe into like the top three or four clubs, right? That was the same guy, wasn't it?
Do you know what? I don't know.
Tom is nodding, and Tom is our oracle on these things. So, yeah, let's hope he is a bit like Adam Phillips, but last season's version. Right. So we talked about Lancaster. We've talked about Brophy, who's joined from Leyton Orient, and also Shiloh Tracy, who for me was a bit of an under the radar kind of signing because it kind of felt like he was part of the squad. But no, it was great to see him rejoin. Moving to the back of the pitch, I guess we've signed two defenders so far. We've got a new right back in George Williams and we've got a new centre back in Lloyd Jones. I'm going to start with Jones because my bold prediction for the season is that this guy is going to become a fan favourite. From what I've seen and what I've read of pre-season so far, he seems to be quite good at sort of bringing the ball out and sort of playing the ball out. So he played Friday night, didn't he, Owen? What was your hot take on him from Friday?
You won't go up with him in defence. Nah, that's unfair. He looked good. He looked pretty composed on the ball. He seemed to be talking to Taylor a lot. Hopefully they get a good understanding there. He did like to come forward. He did like to carry the ball forward. There were times he was bringing the ball right up a pitch, which I don't know if that's necessarily something you always want from your centre back, because we know certainly from last season having wing backs can get caught out sometimes. So, you know, if we are kind of sticking with Iredale at left back and Williams, who we'll come to in a minute, kind of getting forward, that's something we need to be a little bit careful of, I suppose. But he looked decent. He looked solid. He played with commitment, and you know that's all you can ask for really in a player, isn't it? You know, we know we're not going to be signing, you know, absolute top tier players, but as long as they give their all, that's all you can ask for.
So he obviously finished last season at Northampton, who got relegated. But looking into sort of the stats, actually, when he joined for the second half of last season on loan, actually their defensive record was pretty decent, and Northampton fans are sort of bemoaning the fact that they couldn't score goals as the reason that they got relegated. He was also at Northampton the season before that got sort of cut short with COVID. Tom, is it unfair to read into much about that whole situation? I don't know if you remember this. I think he refused to play for them in the playoffs because I think there was like potential for another move to happen. Do you think it's probably too much to read into that?
Are you concerned he might refuse to play in our League One playoff campaign? No, I'm not really. I mean, it's clearly different with the playoffs, right? But I understand why a lower league footballer, where naturally there's not much security around contracts and, you know, their sort of next move, that sort of thing. I understand why they might be a bit hesitant to play for a club when they don't know or don't, you know, they're not sure if they want to be there sort of beyond the end of the season or if they've got a contract, because they could get injured. You know, anything could happen that could end, that could end their career. It seems odd to me that that would happen during the playoffs, but I wouldn't be too worried about it. You know, he's a young guy. Like most of the players that we've got in the team, and like most ones that we're signing, he'll have made his own mistakes sort of throughout his career. That he'll learn from. I mean, it's not really a concern for me. I think, you know, again, like as with the guys at the top of the pitch, like I've just mentioned, I mean, it strikes me again as clever business. I think the one thing people obviously look towards, and this goes for Williams as well, is that they both played for relegated clubs. Doesn't concern me, to be honest. I mean, Digby played for a relegated club, or what should have been a relegated club, with Stevenage the year before we signed him. And he turned out to be pretty okay, I think. So I think the sort of business that we should and have been doing is picking up good players from the league below, like Brophy and Sam Smith, I guess. And failing that, you're picking up the best players from the teams that we can realistically offer a better or more attractive package than. So that's what we seem to have done with these guys. But yeah, for Jones, obviously a centre back, as long as he can head it and kick it, that's my top priority. And as long as he doesn't try any diving headers back to goal from 40 yards out, did a Harrogate, I'm sure we'll get on just fine. So if he is listening, Lloyd, please don't do that. But yeah, I'm sure he'll fit in quite nicely, and hopefully those two can build a pretty solid partnership.
Let's talk about George Williams quickly then. So, like you said, he joined from a team that got relegated last season in Bristol Rovers. Before that, he played for MK Dons for many seasons. He comes Twitter approved by Robbie Simpson, which is obviously quite important. I guess you would file this one, Tom, under plenty of League One experience, which the squad needs.
Yeah, exactly that. I think a bit like Sam Smith, this one's been seen as the replacement for the guy that was before him. But I don't necessarily know if it is that or if it needs to be that. You know, Kyle Noyle leaves big shoes to fill, right? And he played in a certain way, which, you know, at times is like having another forward on the pitch. I don't think it's sensible to go into a season where realistically we're going to be on the back foot in quite a lot of our games with the intention that our fullbacks are going to spend all their time on the edge of the other team's penalty box. So we need some experience at this level. You know, the other players that we've signed have all got experience at this level, but fairly minimal. Williams is the one who has a decent wealth of experience at this level, and he'll be the one that's been looked towards in some of those awkward situations where maybe we, you know, we're under pressure away at, you know, it still sounds mental to say, but away at a stadium of light, something like that. And ultimately, and we'll talk about this more in the season preview, our game plan for this season is going to be quite different to the game plan we went into with games last season. And I think what we need is solidity at the back this year rather than, you know, flair fullbacks or whatever, or sort of however you want to describe them. And it seems like he's going to be exactly that. I know there's been one or two comments on the message board about his performance at St Neots, against Brentford at St Neots. I wouldn't read too much into that just yet, to be honest. Let's see how things go when the actual football starts. But yeah, I like the sign. I thought it seemed like, you know, on paper, again, good business. In terms of the level of experience he's got, I don't think we'll sign too many more of that sort of calibre, if you like. So yeah, it seems all right. I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty happy that we've managed to bring him in.
I mean, Owen, you were there Friday. How was George Williams? I know obviously it wasn't a full strength Premier League Brentford 11 and no Ivan Toney and whatever, but did he offer much going forward, or was he a little bit more defensive minded?
That still sounds really weird, doesn't it? Premier League Brentford. It really does. They're like a team at our level, really. They should be at our level, you know. We used to beat them all the time, other than the Championship decider. I can't get my head around Brentford being in the Premier League, but
they've got a ton more money than us and a brand new stadium, so maybe if we had both of those we might compete, but anyway, George Williams, forward.
He looked okay. I'm gonna say I didn't see a huge amount of him. He played in defense. I was at our attacking end of the pitch before he came off. He looked okay. He got forward a little bit. He was putting crosses in. We're going to compare him with Kyle Noyle, who was, you know, realistically probably a class above League One. You know, probably should be playing in the Championship, but he looked okay. You know, he looked competent enough, and you know, again, that's all you can ask for. Just someone who's going to put their head down and play for the team. Like Tom says, you know, I don't think we'll be playing quite the same way as we did last year. You know, I don't think we'll have, you know, the attacking wing-backs kind of going forward and putting loads of crosses in. I think we will be on the back foot a little bit more. We will be a little bit kind of more measured with our play. I'm certainly not going to judge him on 60 minutes of football. He looks all right. You know, Let's get behind him, see how he does.
Right, let's finish part one by discussing our final new joiner. I was really surprised by this one. And the reason I was surprised is it was done quite early in the transfer window for a loan signing. So perhaps maybe that is an indication for how good this lad is and what a good move it was to get him in. I'm talking about Jensen Weir. He's 19. He's joined on loan from the season from Brighton. He is the son of David Weir, who used to play for Everton and Rangers. And only last year, Brighton paid $500,000 for him. So they obviously back him. Tom, what sort of role do you see for Weir in the squad for this season?
I'm not sure, really. I think he'll be first choice. I think he, you know, a player of that pedigree. He's playing for... he actually used to play for the Scotland youth sides before he saw sense and started playing for the England youth teams.
Right.
So, you know, he's got, you know, a decent amount of caps for the England under-18s. Like you say, Jordan, Brighton have paid a hell of a lot of money for him. It's slightly depressing from my perspective. You know, you guys might be a bit more used to it than me. Someone coming in who's actually significantly younger than I am. But yeah, I think he'll be starting. I think he'll be starting next to Digby. I'm not sure exactly the type of player he is, to be absolutely honest. I know I should be providing more cutting edge analysis than that, but he scored a brilliant goal at Cardiff in I think the first pre-season game that we played, certainly the first one the fans were sort of privy to. But yeah, I was really interested by this one. I think out of all the signings that we've made, this is the one that really sort of grabbed my attention a little bit. Partly because I didn't know anything about it, but partly because it reminds me a bit of when we signed Ryan Ledson. That sort of level of player who comes with this sort of background of, you know, playing for a Premier League football club, involved with the England setup, it's never going to be a bad thing. And to be honest as well, Brighton are very, very good at these signings. They get them right a hell of a, you know, very often. Their recruitment is pretty incredible. So if they're investing that sort of money and probably time into him, then that suggests that he's going to be worth, he's going to have a little bit about him. So I'm really interested to see what we see from this guy. And hopefully, he can contribute going forward as well. I imagine he'll have a bit more of an expansive role in the team should we say. Probably playing with Houlihan more than behind him, I think. Obviously remains to be seen, but seems like on paper again, like a really good sign, and exactly the sort of sign that we should be making. This is a really nice change to be talking like this. Yes, for the pods and sort of discussions that we've had in the build up to seasons previously, it's been, why are we signing Mark Richards? Why are we signing Dan Jones? Why aren't we signing young guys with a bit of potential who are actually going to give a shit? And we seem to be doing it far too often. So I'd like us to maybe go back to typical Cambridge, if that's all right. But yeah, for the time being, we'll put up with us doing actually good business in the window.
Yeah, I think to fill in some of the gaps, I think he might be that box to box type. I think he's got legs. I think he's got pace. I think he likes to. I think Ledson is a very good comparison, not only because of the age and where he's coming from, but also in terms of the style of play. I think he'll want to get on the ball a lot. At least that's, you know, the judgments I'm making from sort of the reviews I've seen from him, and also his interview when he joined. I guess one downer to end part one on, Weir's arrival probably means no Boateng. But anyway, that will do for part one. In part two, we're going to look at the players that have left the club. We're going to talk about Bonner's new contract, and we're going to talk about what positions might still be left to fill in the transfer market. Right, welcome back to part two of Under the Abbey Stand. We've talked about players that have joined Cambridge United so far, ready for the new season. I guess it's now time to talk about those that have left the club. And I think we've put it off as long as we could, like 35, 40 minutes into the pod. We're going to have to talk about Paul Mullin. I think it's safe to say we all kind of knew that he wasn't going to be with us this season. But did anyone see him dropping out of the Football League and joining Wrexham?
It's mad, isn't it? I mean, you know, we know why he's gone there. You know, for the money. I've seen some absolutely insane figures being thrown around. You know, I think someone somewhere or a couple of people have said, like, he's on $9,000 a week. I'd be staggered, absolutely staggered if he's on $9,000 a week. And if he is, I'd be even more staggered if Rex had lost more than two seasons throwing around that kind of money. The longer it went on, the kind of more hopeful I got that, you know, maybe he would sign a new contract. But I also think we offered him a good deal. We brought in Smith. We brought in, you know, other attacking players. We're not going to wait forever. You know, he had a fantastic season last season. Nothing is ever going to take that away from him. You know, as United fans, we should be, you know, really super grateful we got to watch that via iFollow, you know, seeing a player kind of go down in the club's history like that. But, you know, let's be frank, he's probably not going to hit those heights again, is he? He's never come close before. Will he? You know, maybe he will. Maybe he'll have a good season in the Conference, but, you know, there's no guarantees that he's going to get out of it. It's a bit strange to me. I mean, I'm not a footballer, and, you know, I've never had anyone kind of offer to double or triple my salary, which would maybe, you know, maybe kind of, yeah, change my mind if they did. But I don't know. You think you've got the likes of Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich Town, you know, all these big stadiums that you can play in. If you believe in yourself that much and think, you know what, I can hit 20 again this season in League One, you're probably going to go to a Championship next season, and instead of being on $9,000 a week, you're going to be on $29,000 a week, you know, like real life changing money. Like, not that $9,000 a week is anything to be sniffed at, you know. It's
I would quite happily take $9,000 a week, mate.
I would, yeah, say absolutely same. But it's I don't know, it just seems a short-term kind of ambition to me. Drop down in Conference, take the money for 3 years. In 3 years' time, he'll be 30. Is he going to get another league gig if Wrexham don't go up? Or will he just, you know, knock around non-league for a bit? Maybe he'll be happy in that. don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the A word, ambition. And you know what? Perhaps the ambition for Paul Mullin is to provide for his family, and a 3-year deal at that wage. I imagine goal scoring bonuses if you go up, as well as signing on bonus. He could make lots of money there. So perhaps that is the ambition. And you know what? In my eyes, he's earned that move to make the money. I'm just a little bit sad for him that it's not at least at League One level, because I felt like when he joined us, he had a point to prove. He wasn't the main man when Tranmere got out of League Two. He didn't play a lot for them in League One. I felt like this was now his opportunity to push on and prove himself at a higher level. For me, I'm also really proud of the way the club have conducted themselves here. They've obviously set a schedule and a deadline to get a decision. And there's, you know, obviously there's a big attachment to him, you know, because of the season that he had, because he was, you know, part of that promotion winning team. It could have been easy to sort of overlook the running of the club and getting someone in to replace him and having a full pre-season and maybe getting other targets because you're waiting for this one answer. So, you know, I'm proud for the club putting the club first in this whole scenario. Owen, you mentioned we know the reason he's gone there and the reason is money. I wonder though, Tom, if perhaps it's not just money. And I'm wondering, perhaps the longer this went on and the fact that we are 2-3 weeks into pre-season, perhaps he's gone to Wrexham because all the other offers have either dried up or have been rescinded, a bit like ours, because people had to get ready for their seasons.
Yeah, I would probably go even a little bit further than that. I just don't think there was much interest in him, which is strange to say, you know, if someone who had the season like, you know, that obviously he had last year, 34 goals in all competitions, golden boot, broke the league goal scoring record, broke club goal scoring record, League Two Player of the Year and Team of the Year. It was pretty much a perfect season. But, you know, there were some pretty tenuous links to like Middlesbrough and Blackburn that were never really had any sort of decent source behind them, other than, I think, sort of newly made Twitter accounts probably run by 10-year-olds. There was a seemingly fairly strong link to Charlton. But even then, like the Charlton sort of local journalist or sort of local press, they were adamant that there was never any interest in them. And you know, these are the guys who are usually sort of quite in the know about these things. So I just wonder if it's a case that he was expecting more interest than he got. I imagine, although I'm sure he would say it was a hard decision to leave Cambridge, I imagine he'd made his mind up probably when he hit the 20 goal mark, maybe probably as far back as December or January, maybe even a bit earlier than that, that his stock will probably never be higher in reality. And that this was the chance to take a big payday. So the way that I see it is that he would have liked to have taken that sort of money and stayed at this level, but the option just wasn't there. And that's basically, I just think, as simple as it is. And yeah, like you, Jordan, I think I'm more than anything, I'm just happy the way the club handled it, because, you know, it's not too long ago, I think, like the Luke Berry situation particularly, where realistically we knew he was always going to move on in that summer. And yet it dragged on, I think, until the last week of the transfer window and left us up shit creek without a paddle, so to speak. And, you know, this time we've given ourselves pretty much all of pre-season to at least, you know, if not replace him directly, at least try and formulate a way of playing without Paul Mullin, which, again, it sounds strange because of the season that he had and what he did for us last year. I don't think it's going to be that hard. I genuinely don't think, you know, we can change the way that we play. And I just think that last season, and it sounds like sour grapes, and it probably is to an extent. I just don't think he's going to replicate that level of goal scoring unless Wrexham do literally set up the whole team around him and they have someone as good as Wes Houlihan, which they don't, let's be honest. I'm a bit like you there as well, Jordan. I feel like what they did last year, they earned the right to do whatever they wanted in my book, other than the one move, which would have been devastating, which if he was to go up the road, that would have been bad. But he's not getting paid $9,000 a week, but he's going to be getting paid very good money. And the other part of it that I didn't really take into account is that he is now going to be front and centre of this documentary that Wrexham are making. That's going to raise his profile a lot. And it's not just going to be here, it's going to be in the States as well. And if, say, he scores, even if he scores 10 goals and one of them is the goal that gets them up, he might get himself a move to an MLS team or something like that. And if this contract doesn't set him up, then surely the next one will, you know, if obviously it does go well. So
how close is it to Liverpool?
Yeah, I was just going to say, America to Liverpool is a bit of a hard commute.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I never kind of bought that as being an absolutely concrete thing. Like, I'm sure he was talking with clubs that were also not in Liverpool or not near Liverpool. I think that was something that, you know, it was almost like 2 and 2 = 5 from our fans at some point. I think he mentioned in an interview earlier on in the season, that, you know, he only signed a 1-year deal because he wasn't sure how things were going to go, and he has a family up north. He only signed a 1-year deal because he has a family up north, which obviously are similar, but they basically mean different things, and they're quite big differences in this instance. But yeah, I mean, he's gone to Wrexham. I'm a bit disappointed, to be honest, that he's not going to be testing himself at a higher level. Even if it's not with us, like, try it with an established League One club, because I get that, you know, it'll be good money, and I get that it'll help to set his family up. But even if it is, say, $5,000-$6,000 a week, like, it's good money now, but he's still only in his mid-20s, isn't he? Like, he's still gonna have to work after football. It's not completely life-changing money. It's very good money now. But I just wonder if for him, and this obviously depends on how things go at Wrexham, right? Because they might go well, and who knows, next season we could very, very, very easily be playing against each other. But I do wonder whether he might look back in 10, 15 years' time and go, do you know what? I should have taken a little bit less money and really given this football stuff a go, because I feel like he's taken a really easy option here. Whereas if he worked it and really gave it a go in League One or even the level above, we could be sat here in 5 or 10 years' time talking about a player that's gone on to something pretty special, considering where he's come from. So, yeah, I think my overriding feeling is that I'm happy that he's gone there. I'm surprised that he's gone there. I hope he does well. I hope for Wrexham's sake they get out of that division, because objectively speaking, it's been way too long for them to be stuck in the Conference. I think they're going into like their 14th year in there, which is staggering, to be frank. You know, we've got out of there and gone up into League One since they went down. So hopefully they get up. I hope it goes well for him, for his sake, and obviously for what he did for us last season. But yeah, it just thinks of a guy who's just chasing the money and maybe not signing it, you know, from a fan's perspective for the right reasons. But that often doesn't really matter.
I wonder if it's a smart move, you know, not just smart because of the money and the financial incentive, but smart in the sense that this is a club that are going to play him number nine. They're going to make him the main guy and build around him. You know, we were talking about teams like Ipswich and Charlton and others being interested in him this summer, where he would have gone to those clubs and not necessarily been a starter. You know, they've already got, you know, Norwood and Stockley and, you know, Middlesbrough have got Uche. You know, all those other clubs had other strikers for him, where he's gone to Wrexham, where he's going to be the main guy. It's not unheard of for strikers to go from the Conference straight back to League One or the Championship via transfers. So I wonder if it's a smart move, sort of putting himself back in kind of in the main picture a little bit.
Yeah, but I think, again, like, the assumption there is that there was that interest. I just don't think there was. I think if there was an option for him to stay at this level and earn the same money, I think he would have done that. But, you know, nowadays clubs do their recruitment differently. They use data. They, you know, have all sorts of sort of more advanced ways of doing recruitment other than, wow, this guy scored a lot of goals, let's sign him. And it's no surprise to me that it's Wrexham with new owners who want to make a bit of a mark on that division or on wider than that English football, that they've gone out and made that sort of signing. It seems to me even a bit naive. Like, I'm not even sure from their point of view that it represents that good business. They're going to pay $5,000 a week that he's on, which I think is realistic and probably fairly accurate. that's a 750 grand contract that he signed. Bonuses and that sort of stuff, that could get him up to £1 million across 3 years that they might not even get out of the conference. And like, how many times have clubs banked loads of money on strikers who have done it here and done it there and it's not worked out? You know, Torres going to Chelsea all those years ago, 50 million, down the drain pretty much. Grigg in our league, Sunderland signed for £5 million. He's done nothing. He was out on loan at the end of last season. So it's not a guarantee that it's going to be replicated. And I just think that the reaction to Mullin signing for Wrexham seems to have been, oh, well, why didn't you go elsewhere? Well, we might not have had the option to go elsewhere. I look at clubs in our division now, like in League One, especially the ones at the top of the league. Are they really going to want to give someone like a 2 or 3 year deal who they're not even sure is good enough for the level that they're at? Probably not. Like, even with us, like, I think there was a sense from some of our fans that everything was kind of set up for him last year, and it was a bit of a perfect storm that resulted in having the season that he had. And even going up to League One, there's no guarantees that in a higher league against more difficult opposition that he would replicate anything like what he had. But we'll see. And like I said, I do wish him all the best, but I just think for him, he would have hoped for a better move. It didn't materialise, and he's basically ended up going to the highest bidder, which is fair enough, because it's a short career and he'll want to milk it for all it's worth.
I think you said it in the chat, didn't you, Tom? You said it's a Football Manager signing. It's, filtered by goals signing. And, you know, we've all played enough Football Manager and Championship Manager back in the day to know that, you know, bringing in someone who's had like this stellar season and, you know, yeah, it doesn't always work out. You'll be back to scoring 9-10 goals before you know it. And
yeah,
we know how difficult it is to get out of a conference, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we've not only the conference, but League Two, we've seen so many clubs in and around us that have spent big money on signings. You know, I think about Salford and was it Gaffney, the Irish striker that we had that ended up at Salford, not directly from us, I don't think, but he dropped down for big money. So it doesn't always work out. But the flip side is there might be a glimmer there of Wrexham being the next Lincoln. You know, they might get up and then get up again. So it could go either way. It's a risk. Best of luck to Paul Mullin. I will close the Paul Mullin chat by saying one final thing. There's something with Cambridge United and strikers, Rendell, Shaggy, McLeish. We quite often see them come back more, come back for a second time. So who knows if the Mullin story is fully over for us and Cambridge United. Talking of moving on, and again, a similar theme of a bit of surprise about where they've ended up. Kyle Noyle will be in League One next season. Do you think that's a realistic return of the player that he is, or do you think it's a surprise that he's not ended up in the Championship?
Yeah, I think with Noyle, I think there probably would have been people looking at him from higher up. And I think for him, it probably was more a case of, I want to pick somewhere where I'm going to be part of something that realistically could result in me advancing my career, rather than, I don't know, like a QPR or something like that, where they're, you know, he might not be first choice and, you know, he might end up kind of falling back down the pyramid. But it seems, this seems like a long time ago. Just thinking about him going to Doncaster, I mean, it seems pretty reasonable now, given what we've just talked about with Mullin. But when the news came out, I thought you maybe sold yourself a bit short there. Having said that, Doncaster have been, you know, a decent team at this level for a few years now. I think they were in the playoffs 1 year. They just fell short last year, and they'll probably be hoping to be there and thereabouts again this season. So probably from his perspective, it's probably a pretty sensible move, to be honest. Obviously, we seem to be creating a bit of a highway to Doncaster for right backs at the moment. So George Williams, if you're looking for your next contract after us, I think we know where you'll be going. But it obviously doesn't need to be said too often, but I think the players that we had last year, they just have like my best wishes kind of forever, really, because of what they did. And Noyle's no different. He was, I'd probably argue, the best player last season. Certainly the one that every week you're like, he is class. So I was a little bit surprised to see him not in the Championship. But yeah, certainly I think he'll do well at this level. And I really do genuinely hope on that he can really hit the heights that he looks like he could do.
Doncaster aren't a particularly glamorous club, but I think we sell them short. You know, they've got a nice stadium. They've got, you know, they've got ambition. I think Noel will end up in the Championship before too long. I'd like to see him there. I'd like to see him play as, you know, as high as he can. I really rate him. He was a really great player for us last season. But yeah, let's. I'm not going to begrudge him, Doncaster. And, you know, if they go up this year, great. If someone comes in bigger next year or year after looking for him, yeah, happy days. Like, he absolutely deserves it. Yeah, has my best wishes for sure.
Speaking of best wishes, I'm sure we're all in agreement that Callum Burton and Luke Hannan, who have left the club this summer, we wish them well at their new clubs. Burton obviously will be in League One with us, signed at Plymouth. Not sure if he'll be first choice. Hannan, on the other hand, took a decision to drop down to League Two and the big rebuilding job that's going on at Colchester. Do you think Hannan's decision there, Tom, was based on maybe having an honest conversation with Bonner in the summer and realising that he's probably not going to be first choice in League One and would rather just go out and play first team football?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I was pretty surprised that he left because we'd offered him a new deal. I thought that was sort of, you know, case closed, basically. As soon as we offered him something, I thought he would have signed straight away. But yeah, I think realistically, probably since about December, towards the end, until pretty much the end of the season, he wasn't putting in the sort of performances that we know he's capable of. He was not playing to his full potential. And I think probably realistically, something new for him, a fresh start, is probably no bad thing. Like you said, it's a bit of a rebuild at Colchester. So hopefully that'll be, you know, for obviously his sake, pretty, you know, hopefully exciting and something that can kind of really, you know, kickstart his career again. Because it seemed like it was going a bit stale with us, weirdly, despite the fact that he was in a team that got promoted. But yeah, you know, I obviously wish Hannan the best, but I think it was the right time to move on. I think we brought in more than adequate replacements for him, certainly in someone like James Brophy, who I think will add, you know, a decent amount to our squad. I'm going to miss the little free kicks that he won.
I was going to say, have we replaced him in the shithousery stakes? Yeah. But you've done it in a much more polite way, saying the.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's parts of his game like that I'll miss, but at the same time, like, I remember being intensely frustrated at times that just get on with it. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, he dyed his hair like Phil Foden did, so he looks like a bit of a knob at the moment. But regardless, hopefully go to Colchester and do well. And likewise, Burton, who you mentioned before there as well, obviously could probably count himself a little bit harshly done by to have been released. But again, probably just an honest conversation that had to happen. And he's obviously found himself a club in League One as well. So we'll see how it goes. But all the best to both of them.
Owen, I feel like we've spoken about this so much over the last couple of seasons. Mitov or Burton, have we kept the right one?
Probably. In hindsight, Burton did great, didn't he, when he came in last year. But, you know, I think Mitov was always number one at the club. Burton was fantastic penalty stopper, you know, decent shot stopper. He didn't let us down when he was called upon. Congrats to him for staying in League One. I don't think he's as bad as some people make out. I don't think he's as fantastic as some people make out, but you know, I think Plymouth have got themselves an all right goalie. And
At least this goalkeeper hasn't killed anyone, so that's an upgrade for Plymouth, right? Yeah. Right. let's finish the part by concluding. Well, we've talked about people that have joined. We've talked about people that have left. Let's finish part two very quickly by addressing Mark Bonner and Ben Strang, who are definitely listening to this, and telling them what areas on the pitch we are concerned about and we would like to see some signings in. I will get the ball rolling, and Bon has already said this in a recent interview, but I think we need another centre-back. Anyone disagreeing with that?
No. I'd like to see a centre-back with some experience, a bit more experience. Greg's got experience, he's an experienced player, but he hasn't got kind of League One experience. ideal world, realistically, I'd love to see someone like Michael Morrison come back. You know, I know he's getting on a bit now, but, you know, he's played at a really high level. I'm sure there's plenty of other decent centre-backs out there. I wouldn't be against seeing Okadina come back on loan from Spurs, but, you know, he's very inexperienced, and that showed a little bit last season. But, you know,
could he be an answer because he can play centre back and a makeshift right back? You know, is that perhaps the profile or the type of player we might be looking for? Someone that can cover more than one place?
Yeah, I think a bit of versatility is always useful, isn't it? I don't think we really got to see him play right back, did we, last season? So, you know, how good he is there, I don't know. But Spurs obviously rate him. I guess they're going to want him to go out at a higher level, be that League One, be that Championship, I don't know. So, yeah, I wouldn't have any complaints if Okadina rocked back up at the Abbey. Drysdale, you know, he's young. He did all right when he came in, but yeah, I don't know. He didn't wow me. He didn't wow me, Drysdale. So, you know, I'm sure there's tons of centre backs out there. And yeah, like you said, Bonner's looking to address that, isn't he?
What about you, Tom? Any areas on the pitch you think we're light?
Yeah, centre back's the obvious one. I'd be astounded if the conversations haven't happened with Spurs about if we can get Okadina back. Because he, you know, a bit like Tracy, really sort of fit in really well when he came in. And I think in terms of the depth or lack of depth that we have at the back at the moment, he would pretty much be the perfect answer. But, you know, it doesn't always have to be players that have been here before, which sometimes seems to be the suggestion. But, you know, they're working pretty hard. It sounds like that's their priority. I was surprised to hear Bonner say that he thinks we're well stocked up front, to be honest. That's one area that I've been looking at, thinking we could probably do with somebody else in. Not because we're short of bodies, but I would like to see us bring in someone maybe with a bit more experience at League One level. And like I've said already, I'm still not convinced that for all the good work he did out alone, that Dallas is the answer. I think Nibs can have a bigger contribution this season. Obviously, he had troubles with injury last season, and hopefully that's behind him now. You know, full pre-season is can only help with that. And I think he's again a player with really good potential. But if you're asking me sort of players or sort of positions that I'd be looking at, I'd be centre back and forward, to be honest. But on another note, I'd probably like to sign a better goalkeeper. I said it for a long time, sort of throughout the last year, that, you know, in my opinion, neither of those were good enough to be good a number one in League Two. I don't think Mitov, he's getting better, and he got better until his injury throughout last season. But I would like us to go in and get a proper number one goalkeeper, to be honest. I noticed that Louis Chadwick's gone out on loan. Mackenzie Lyle's going to be on international duty fairly frequently. I think it's an area that we will bring somebody else in. But whether it's going to be like a number one or sort of a backup keeper, that obviously remains to be seen. But in an ideal world, if we had almost like an unlimited budget and could bring in anyone that we liked, I'd say centre back, then striker, then goalkeeper.
Have you noticed that Burnley have also signed a goalkeeper this summer? I'll just leave it at that. Right, join us in part three, where we talk about the legend that is Harrison Dunk. Right, welcome back everyone to part three, the part I am calling Any Other Pre-Season Business. We're going to talk about Harrison Dunk, but before that, I have a question for Owen. Owen, you went to St. Neots on Friday night, you saw us play against Brentford. My question is, did the kit look any better in the flesh than it does on photos?
Yeah, it does. It looks a little bit better in the flesh. I'm not going to say too much about the home kit. It's not my favourite design we've had. It's fair to say. The away shirts though, the black away shirt and the white third shirt, absolutely incredible, absolutely fantastic shirts, lovely bit of design. They're going to look really, really smart, I think. You know, we don't wear a third shirt much, but, you know, hopefully the home shirt's fairly heavy on the black as is the away shirt. So, you know, fingers crossed we get to see it a bit more because, yeah, I think those two in particular are both really smart.
I quite like, this is probably a controversial opinion, I quite like us in all amber as a home design and then all black or all white as an away design. So that's my only positive for the home shirt. It is an interesting piece, shall we say. I feel like we've got a cult, like a future cult kit on our hands that perhaps we're not doing justice, and use fans in, you know, 2055 will be clamoring onto eBay to try and get one of these shirts for £300.
Oh yeah, everyone's slagging up now.
And we're all here belittling it. So who knows? It might survive the test of time. Tom, you're a man of fashion. Talk us through the free kits that we've got so far this season.
the home shirt is going to look better on the footballers than it will do the fans. That's my biggest prediction. I like the away shirt and I like the third kit, so I think I'm fairly similar to Owen in that respect. The reaction to the home kit made me laugh, man, because some people were livid, like unnecessarily angry about it. I thought, just don't buy it, like it's not a problem. Yeah, I mean, look, if you gave me a pen and paper and asked me to design the home kit, it's not what I'd have come up with, but I think we've had Hummel for, what, 3 years now, and this is the first one that is arguably not right. So, yeah, you know, every now and again, I guess you do one. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is. It's a football shirt. Without trying to sound too old school, I'm more bothered about the players in it than what they're actually wearing. But, yeah, I'm sure it'll grow on us. And maybe they'll be doing remakes like they did with the other ones. I'd be interested to know, by the way, because obviously 90s kits were clearly tragic. They look awful, but somehow they're now hot property. I'd love to know what people were saying about those Fujitsu kits back in the day. Like, what's the pattern? It looks like a bruised banana. It looks awful. That sort of stuff. And now look at us, like, all clamoring around for them whenever we can get our hands on them. So, yeah, I don't really care, to be honest. It's a kit. I think mainly they're quite nice. They probably sell quite well. And that means that we have more money. So that's always a good thing.
I remember quartered shirt being very controversial when that came out. The one with the granddad collar and the very old-fashioned badge. I remember that being really controversial when that came out. I think it still splits the camps nowadays, doesn't it, into old badge or new badge. And then the CNR tomato, that one followed it, which I know you're a big lover of, Jordan. Again,
well, you've got your camps wrong with the badge, mate. There's a third camp, and that's the book and ball, and that's where everyone should be. So just correcting you on that one there. Yeah, I think the Fujitsu ones at the time were pretty much like this. I think they split opinion. I know people who were following the club at the time. And speak to them now, they're like, oh, I don't get it. I don't see why these appeal. So, you know, perhaps we'll be having these discussions in the future. But I like to think that someone somewhere, there is a Cambridge United fan who's gone, I've always wanted a tartan kit. I'm so happy. They've probably not been the most vocal. I've not seen them on Twitter or anything like that yet. But somewhere there is that one fan. And I guess the important thing with the new kits this year is the League One badges on the sleeve, which look fantastic. Let's talk about a man who looks terrific in every kit. Harrison Dunk, 30 years of age. It's just about to start his 11th season with the club. I was looking into this. He joined us and he was on a gap year from university. He wasn't sure what he was going to do with his career. Since then, he's signed 6 contracts with the club. He's played over 330 games for us. The word legend gets thrown about quite easily these days, but this is a guy that deserves that term, right?
Yeah.
Whoa, there was too big a gap there.
he's been with us since, you know, since the 2010-2011 season, I think. we was a very different football club back then. I think it was probably Jez George was the manager. To see Dunk play for us, you know, to have some consistency through all our success over the last kind of 10 years. And, you know, and say what you want about like Sean Derry and Colin Calderwood and all that, but, you know, we've been promoted twice in the last 10 years, which, you know, for a lot of clubs is a pretty decent return. And, you know, it's always great to have a player there, isn't it, that has stuck with the club. And he'd been written off a few times. You know, early on, he was a little bit injury prone. Then, you know, he lost a little bit of his pace and people were like, oh, is he going to be first choice again? And then this season just gone in particular, he's kind of really reinvented himself, hasn't he? He started playing a little bit further down, a little bit further back up the pitch, you know, more left back than on the left wing, you know, adapting as he's getting a little bit older, changing his game. You know, that just shows you the mark of a really, really intelligent player. And, you know, at any club in any league nowadays, for a player to do 10 years, you know, I can't think of many players at any club that are, you know, that kind of got that far, you know, to earn a testimonial against, you know, especially against QPR, you know, his boyhood club, you know, the club he supported. And I think he still goes to watch when he's not playing on Saturdays. That's fantastic. He deserves it. He certainly deserves a big attendance for sure.
I can't believe that he's only 30. You know, he's been here so long. I feel like he should be like mid to late 30s. And in my eyes, him and Greg Taylor, there's no reason why they shouldn't see out the rest of their careers with the club. Like, obviously, you know, perhaps not as starters, but definitely as squad players, as over the next couple of years, they can offer the versatility of playing in more than one position. So I would love to see the pair of them, you know, last the distance. And just looking at appearances, I think Steve Spriggs is our all-time record holder. He did 12 years with the club, 416 appearances. Incidentally, he also got two promotions. So I would love to see one of Harrison or Greg, if not both, get close to that 416 figure, which is, well, going to be quite a big ask, but fingers crossed it happens.
You always get one of those players, don't you? Like, I think Bournemouth had, was it like Hayter or someone like that, who played with them for like, you know, in every league up to the Premier League. I think Brighton have got someone that had been there since they were down in League One or League Two. So, you know, imagine that, give it a couple of seasons. Imagine Harrison Dunk leading us out at a slightly redeveloped Abbey against a Premier League team. Imagine that.
Owen, if that happens, I will eat one of the tartan shirts in full. I would love to see it happen. Tom, when we were talking about this yesterday, you said that you had a hot take that you wanted to share with about Dunk on the pod. So I'm coming to you for that hot take now.
Yeah, I think I've shared this opinion privately with quite a few people, but I think he's probably our best ever signing. I've said it a couple of times to different people, and the reaction's always been like, that's madness. That's crazy. And then you have to ask the question, well, who's been better? What signings have we made in our history that have given us this amount of, you know, this length of service and the success that he's had over those years and the quality of performance he's managed to give pretty much every time he's put the shirt on, and to have played with us at three different levels, to have been on cup runs, to have won at Wembley twice with us, to now be part of the best team for the last 20 years. I think if it's not him, he's certainly the second or third best. So that's basically as hot a take that I could provide on Harrison Dunk. But he's been so good. Like, when he signed for us, I was still at school. Remarkable. He's turned out better than I have, but he's to still be putting in the performances that he is, and the way that he's changed his game to basically stop getting injured and basically ensure that he can be part of the squad more often than not. I think just shows like a really intelligent footballer. Like when he signed for us, you know, came from Bromley for like, it would have been peanuts, whatever it was, it wasn't enough. And I remember he was sort of branded as like the non-league Gareth Bale. I don't know if you guys remember that. And literally yep. that's basically the way that he played. He was this flying winger, took people on, got at them, got to the byline, got in behind, and he got appropriate attention from defenders for it. And that's basically why I think he was constantly injured. It was never, as I understand it, sort of ongoing injury problems that he had. It was basically just the fact he was having the shit kicked out of him every week. And to be honest, during his first season with us, if you told me he was still going to be here even 6 months later, I'd have been surprised, because there was a point where he was seriously, seriously linked with, I think at the time it was Southampton and possibly Cardiff, who were like in like right at the top of the Championship at the time. In fact, I think they actually got promoted to the Premier League that year. So it shows you the quality of performances that he was putting in at that time. And then, you know, we obviously went on 2 or 3 years which weren't so great in the conference, and then obviously got promoted. He was a big part of that squad. Went on the cup runs, you know, he played against Man United at home, he played against Man United away, I think. And then obviously throughout the next years, he became, even if the club wasn't doing that well on or off the pitch, he was performing pretty well. And I like that he's been a player who hasn't always been the first name on the team sheet. I like that he's a player who's had to work really hard to get where he is. And I like that he's just still here. Because like you say, Owen, it's rare nowadays, especially in the lower leagues, that players give this level of service to one football club. And for him still to be here, for him to get his testimonial against a team that he supports is really good to see and really nice. And it'll be a good occasion on Tuesday against QPR. You know, a lot of people will be listening to this perhaps after the event, so hopefully it's all gone really well and it's a really good, you know, good occasion for him if that's the case. But I really like the fact that he's done so well. I love that he's still here, and hopefully he's still got a few years of service left in him, because he's such a good ambassador for the club as well. You know, you listen to any interview with him and he just comes across as a really intelligent, articulate guy. And I think he's going to be successful whatever he does after football as well. So, I really like Harrison Dunk. He's, you know, certainly one of the players that I always look forward to seeing, because he leaves everything out on the pitch all the time. You know, the amount of times that he just looks absolutely knackered after games because he's put so much into them, you know, you kind of lose count. So, hopefully it's the sort of event that he deserves. And I hope that he can go and have a really good season in League One, because I'm intrigued to see how people like him and Greg and Liam O'Neill make that step up, because if we are going to survive next season, we're going to need guys like that to be putting in a shift and really, really putting everything into it. And I've got no doubts that they'll at least try. But I really hope for their sake that they can do themselves some justice in League One, but no more than Harrison Dunk, because across the 10 years that he's been here, he's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out that it's Sunday evening and we're recording this, and if all goes to plan, we'll be releasing this before Doug's testimonial, which will make this next line a bit silly if you're listening to it afterwards. But he's going to get the profits from the game. So if you can't make it for whatever reason, buy a ticket. Just buy a ticket and a little bit will go to him because he deserves it. Let's finish the pod by talking about our favourite Dunk memories. Hopefully, Owen, you thought of one. I'll come to you after me. To give you a little bit more time to see if you have got one. For me, I'm going to take us back to not that long ago in Dunk's career, actually. The heady days of February 2018. I believe we were properly up against it and were sort of looking at being involved in the relegation picture. We went away midweek to Chesterfield, who were also in and around the relegation spots. I believe they ended up going down that season, and I can't remember the game in detail about who went ahead first and who equalized or whatever, but my favorite moment was a Dunk winner deep in stoppage time to make it 3-2, and then just the scenes of Dunk and the rest of the team running across to the United fans in the corner along the side of the pitch where the United fans were. And I believe a couple of them jumped over the fence to get in with the fans. And I remember Uche getting booked for it. So that was brilliant, brilliant night. That was my favourite dunk memory. Owen, have you got one?
Yeah, I mean, mine isn't a specific memory as such. It's an image that's kind of seared in my head, which is just basically, Tom, you mentioned, you know, he had this kind of non-league Gareth Bale nickname in his early years, and just kind of how exciting it was to see him, you know, just pegging it down that wing and absolutely destroying people in the conference. And you know, he's kept that up. I mean, even as he, you know, as we said, he's changed his game a little bit. But he, you know, when Harrison Dunk, picture this now, Harrison Dunk on the ball, mid-flight, amber shirt, in front of a Habin. That's it for me. That's my abiding Dunk memory.
Yeah, as a Habinite, I find, and someone mentioned this on the message board a few weeks ago, and it's spot on. You do find yourself being drawn to our right backs and our left wingers because you just see them so often where we stood. Tom, to close the pod, Dunk memory.
Yeah, well, Jordan, when you asked me my favourite Dunk memory, I would say to you, remember the 5th of November, specifically in 2011. This was his first season with us, I think. Mansfield away. We were 1-0 down, and I think within about the space of 5 minutes, Dunk scored twice to basically turn the game on its head. I'll read you the short but sweet BBC description of his first goal. Dunk scored his first after beating three defenders and scoring with a powerful shot. And his second was pretty similar as well, if I remember rightly. So if you're asking me for specifics, I'd probably say that game and that day, because that kind of summed him up as a player, really. And it's fair to say that it's gone pretty well since then as well.
Beautiful stuff. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. I'll see you Tuesday night as we return to the Abbey. Thanks for listening, everyone.